Are taxpayers profiting from the financial crisis?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to The Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. The Federal Reserve returned a record $47-plus billion to the U.S. Treasury last year. And most of it was interest on all that debt the Fed bought up in the big meltdown on all those assets. So we're going to talk about that in just a moment. First, let's check in with the stock market. Where's Wall Street? Heading south this morning, the Dow is down 99 points at 11,025. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are down more than 1%. The government said this morning wholesale inflation rose more than expected. A new report shows Greece ran an even bigger budget deficit last year than we thought. Then there's that crackdown on Wall Street we'll talk about in a moment. Stocks are also lower in both Europe and Asia. Now let's say good morning to Chief Economist Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial. She comes to us live from Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
I want to talk about a little good news concerning unemployment this morning. The government said first-time claims for jobless benefits dropped sharply last week. How big a deal is that?
Well, it's important in that they came off elevated levels the week before, and the trend is in the right direction. It means that layoffs have abated. The bad news is hiring has yet to really pick up. Also, many of those unemployment claims are now coming from people who've run out of their severance and are now applying for unemployment insurance because they thought they'd already have a job by now.
Right. Okay. Not that they're working, just that it's the next resort.
Exactly.
Diane, the other fascinating story, as I mentioned, the Federal Reserve handed over $47 billion to the Treasury Department, money it basically made from the financial crisis. Are taxpayers profiting from the meltdown?
Well, they're not profiting. The losses that were expected as a result of everything from TARP to the interventions by the Fed are significantly less than most people expected because they, in fact, worked. Those interventions, along with coordinated efforts abroad, helped to stabilize the economy and bring back many of these companies from the brink. And now the cost of it is much less than we once thought. But we're a long way from profiting. Remember, the deficit is still widening.
Yes. So no profit, just less expensive than we thought. Economist Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial, thank you.
Thank you.
This morning, President Obama will speak at historic Cooper Union College in Lower Manhattan, and his audience will include financial industry executives, including the president of Goldman Sachs. The president will tell the industry to quit trying to block the overhaul of financial regulations. Joining me to talk about this morning's speech is Washington Post reporter Michael Shear, who has been following the financial reform story. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, how are you?
He's joining us live. Michael, where does the story of financial regulation stand now, and how momentous is this morning's speech?
I think it's pretty momentous because, you know, here we are, a couple of years after the big collapse and the meltdown, and it looks like we're on the verge of getting some bipartisan reform and restructuring of the financial regulation system in place. The speech is going to try to push it over the edge, but reports from Washington late last night, were that both sides are pretty close.
Okay, so you say some kind of bipartisan reform will pass, but how successful has the financial industry been in softening the restrictions on Wall Street in this bill?
Well, it depends who you talk to. I mean, the key piece that a lot of people talk about is this Consumer Protection Agency, which the current legislation envisions would be housed within the Federal Reserve. There are a lot of critics who say that's not strong enough, it won't have the teeth, it needs to be an independent agency. But on the other hand, look, the lobbyists for the industry are indeed lobbying heavily and are out in force, which suggests that there is at least something that they're afraid of.
Well, give us one example, say, of what this bill achieves. What is the president's most remarkable victory?
Well, I think, among the victories would be a real new regulation of the derivative industry, which, of course, had been that complicated procedure that many of these institutions use to try to make a quick buck. This would limit and restrict the kinds of techniques that they could use, although it wouldn't eliminate it, as the president will say, that there's some valid uses for such things. But it would really pull back the kind of high-flying tactics that they can use to make a lot of money.
Washington Post reporter Michael Shear setting up for us this morning's speech from President Obama. Thank you, Michael.
Sure.
This is the Morning Report for Thursday, April 22nd at marketplace.org. Norway and Sweden closed their airspace to commercial travel again today because of safety fears. Nonetheless, flight schedules in the rest of Europe are returning to normal after being closed for almost a week because of that Icelandic volcano. In Europe, the closure means the airlines may have to pay, and that has left some budget carriers a little worried, as Stephen Beard reports from London.
Under EU law, all carriers have to pay the full cost of accommodation and food for their stranded passengers. That will hit the low-budget airlines hardest. They'll be picking up a tab that dwarfs the ticket price. Michael O'Leary, the combative boss of low-cost Ryanair, at first refused to pay up. He's now backed down and agreed to comply with the law, but he's complaining bitterly about it.
We're definitely calling for the suspension of these ludicrous passenger compensation rules, which entitle passengers, even those paying 20 and 30 euro airfares, to seek reimbursement of their hotel expenses from airlines, which could run to many hundreds of euros. It's just not fair.
Especially, he says, since the long delays were beyond the airline's control. European carriers say the compensation rules represent a massive competitive disadvantage. US airlines only have to pay similar costs when they're at fault. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
20th Century Fox is releasing Avatar on DVD. DVD sales have been dropping. They fell 13% last year. But Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports Hollywood could be banking on a three-dimensional strategy to make sales pop again.
One of Avatar's biggest selling points is that it literally reaches out of the screen.
You're on Pandora.
Theaters showing the film in 3D brought in three-quarters of U.S. revenues. But the DVD out today is only in two dimensions. Porter Bibb is with MediaTek Capital Partners, and he says there's a reason.
Well, there are probably three people in the United States who have 3D TV sets right now.
Companies like Sony are making the sets, so Bibb expects Fox to release Avatar's 3D disc next year. Video analyst Kurt Scharf says Hollywood is trying to add a new dimension to DVD sales.
I certainly think that it could help increase the revenues and somewhat stabilize revenues for the next few years.
Assuming that more than just three people buy those 3D sets. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
As we talked about, President Obama speaks near Wall Street this morning. He will urge Congress to tighten up financial regulations and urge the industry to go along with it. The president has said if we don't change what led to the crisis, we'll doom ourselves to repeat it. But how do we know that? I asked Marketplace's economics editor, Chris Farrell, to explain. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Chris, it looks like we are coming out of this recession. It is outrageous that taxpayers had to foot the bill, but couldn't you say that the system has kind of proven it can take a crisis and bounce back?
Well, the system has proved that lots of nights eating pizza and soda, you could come up with some ways to try and save the system. But I got to tell you, Bill, you know, the next time around, we could be hit with the kind of body blow that just knocks the global economy back into a depression.
Why do you say that? What are you envisioning?
First of all, the U.S. acted as lender of last resort to the global economy. But we've had a huge increase in our debt. Bankers are not popular on Main Street. And I don't think that our politics would allow for a reprise. But there's also this very important point, which is that the too big to fail banks, they're global in scope. So we do need better regulation. Absolutely. But if it can't be done internationally, it can't be done at all.
Well, then that's very worrisome, isn't it? What are the chances of us regulating a global banking system?
Well, I am really worried. I mean, can you imagine the U.S. and China saying that we're going to give up our power to a global regulator? Not going to happen. But we do need uniform global rules. And that's why the action is going to shift from Washington to Switzerland. That's where the Basel Committee's meeting, 27 countries trying to come up with uniform guidelines.
Okay, you've convinced me we're vulnerable, Chris, but what are the odds? I mean, how scary is the situation?
The situation is not scary today, next year, the year after that. The situation gets scary when the business cycle expansion has been going on for a period of time because Wall Street has learned to make as many heads I win, tails the taxpayer loses, bets as possible.
Marketplace's economics editor, Chris Farrell. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks a lot.
One of New York City's commuter railroads is buying new train cars, and those cars are not capable of linking up with the last remaining 10 bar cars in America, which means stockbrokers ordering vodka on the ride home may soon be a thing of the past. Here's reporter Jill Barchet.
Joanna Solano is mixing a vodka tonic. She tends bar on the Metro North line between New York City and Stamford, Connecticut. She says the people in the bar car are like a family.
Mostly stock, people from Wall Street, advertising, marketing, hard day at work, stress at work. This is happy hour for them.
But the states of Connecticut and New York are calling last orders. Marjorie Anders from Metro North Railroad says the state legislatures didn't fund enough regular cars for all the commuters.
We have a lot of people who need a seat more than they need a bar car. So if we get enough cars out there so that we can satisfy our customers, then maybe we'll have time to think about ordering some bar cars.
Anders says commuters will still be able to order booze from Metro North's concession stands on the platform and take the drink aboard. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
Speaking of concession stands, ever since the NBA's New Jersey Nets announced plans to build a new arena in Brooklyn, some local residents have opposed the development, and no one more than Daniel Goldstein. For 6 years, he's refused to sell his condo to make way for the arena. Until now, Goldstein, who bought his three-bedroom condo for $590,000, has agreed to clear out in exchange for $3 million. And so, the Nets come to Brooklyn, and good things come to those who wait. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.